there a writing craft book on your bedside table? Has it been there for a while?
Do you keep meaning to get past chapter 2, or chapter 1, or just the first page?
Then the Words to Write By podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Renee. I teach composition and creative writing to college students. My background is in poetry, but I'm working on my memoir.
And I'm Kim. I'm trained as a science journalist, but now I'm trying my hand at short fiction. Each week, we'll be tackling a chapter of some well-known, but perhaps not so well-read, writing craft book.
Together, we'll uncover brilliant insights, face the hard truths, and totally disagree when the author is wrong.
This is our podcast, after all.
And then, we're going to take what we learn and apply it to our own writing.
By doing the book's suggested exercises.
We're inviting you to read along, or just tune in for the Cliff Notes version.
We're committed to improving our own craft, one writing advice book at a time, and we'd love for you to join us. Usually we begin the podcast by talking with writers about their successful approaches and techniques. This episode, we're going to talk about what keeps them from writing.
Okay, so you've been writing since you were in high school.
Ish, yeah.
And you're still writing.
I'm still writing.
But it's sometimes difficult for you to get the words out?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Of course, the best is when you sit there and the keys are just clack, 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 and then 3 hours go by. But that's usually rare. It goes in fits and starts. When I'm at a point in my story where I'm not sure what I'm doing, the fun of writing disappears and it becomes a chore. And then I find all kinds of other chores that need doing, like laundry and grocery shopping and, you know, watching TV. That's something you just have to do, obviously, instead of sitting down to write. And like, the more I think about that, the more I realize that it's all in your head. Like, whether you can write or not has not that much to do with your environment or your schedule. It's really just motivation, because I can be really, really busy, but if I'm motivated, none of that matters. I just go write. If I'm not motivated or inspired, I have so many things to do, I can't possibly go write, you know, so... Yeah.
What is that particular type of procrastination or not getting around to writing that haunts you the worst?
It is when I start thinking of the novel and I only have, at this point, I only have 20,000 words. Oh, God. I've got to do another, you know, 50 or 60,000 words here. I can't do this. I can't do this. And that is the hardest one to get past. Because at that point, I'm not liking it anymore. And I have to keep liking it.
Is there anything that gets in your way? Like when you want to write and you can't or you don't?
Well, sometimes I would get where I just didn't feel enthusiasm for a project anymore. And I wouldn't know why it was. So I used to think I had all the regular problems. Like, oh, I get distracted by music or Facebook or the TV. And then I thought, you know, no, it's really more that I'm avoiding something in the story.
So there are three things that prevent you from writing.
Yes, three things for sure. Number one is when I have a lot of notes to address. I've just gotten a reader's feedback or multiple readers' feedback, and I feel overwhelmed at tackling it all because I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to take those notes. That definitely prevents me from writing sometimes. Second one would be I'm writing a memoir. So where I currently am at in the memoir, if it's a particularly painful period or difficult experience that I don't really want to put myself through, I'm just not in the mental state to like go back there and sit in it and live in it so I could write about it. Well, that will keep me from writing sometimes. And then the third one would be if I don't have a plan yet, if I feel stuck, like, well, the next chapter, it could go this way, it could go this way, it could go this way. I'm still stewing about it. And so I'm still sort of like not sure, even though I know it comes to you. Once you sit down and set aside the time and you're looking at your laptop or however you write, a direction starts to happen, you know, and you go in that direction until maybe you should do something else. Those would be the three things for me.
I'm being honest. I think one of the things that stops me from writing the most is just fear, not necessarily of the actual process, but like what the outcome's going to be, realizing that what I have in my head is not going to be as nice as what's on paper, or even just the fact that writing for me taps into some pretty serious emotions. And sometimes I just don't want to go there because I've already had a long day or I'm doing other stuff and it just doesn't feel like the right time, even though there isn't necessarily a right time.
A big thanks to Abby, Nick, Christine, Susan, and Laura for discussing the things that keep them from writing. I think all writers can commiserate with at least one or two of these issues. And as it happens, our next book is all about overcoming these hurdles. And so with that, on to the podcast. Welcome to Words to Write By. We are on season two.
Season two! We made it!
Yes, we took a little break around the holidays, and now we're back. We have a new book, and we are ready to go.
I feel new. I feel like I got a new outfit on. I went shopping. And now I'm showing it off. Oh, yeah. We got like little makeovers. Okay, maybe we didn't get makeovers. But the podcast got a little makeover, right?
Podcast got a little makeover. And at the end of the episode, we're going to talk about some other changes that we're doing for the Patreon account. But first, Bird by Bird.
Bird by Bird.
Probably the best-selling writing help advice book out there.
We have not looked that up, dear listener.
I had it on the account of a bookstore owner. Bird by Bird and Stephen King's On Writing. Those are the two that always sell.
I wonder if we should do On Writing. We'll wait on that. Let's just do Anne Lamott. Because right now, you know how we do it. We toggle between a technique book and a process book. And we did Jack Bickham's Scene and Structure. Totally technique. Like technique on steroids. But now we're going to the ultimate. The most best-selling process book ever.
If you search up best writing advice books on the internet, the list always includes Bird by Bird, with such comments as, it's an essential part of any writer's toolbox. That's thewritelife.com. Or, one of the most celebrated books for writers, beginner or otherwise. That's by author Bruce Rosenstein. But when I was researching people advocating for this book, I found this one from book coach and author Sarah Tinsley, who writes, the main thing I love about the book was that it's funny. As writers, I'm sure we all take ourselves too seriously anyway, so it was incredibly refreshing to read something that was incredibly tongue-in-cheek and lacking any sense of pomposity when it came to writing. Like her, I'm also uncomfortable about people enthusing over things like flow and creative source. So it's great to hear from someone who talks about all the fluffy stuff with a cynical tone that doesn't take away from the magic of it all. So that's other people's opinions. And now, on to what we think.
So, did you have a copy of this book on your bookshelf, Renee?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have a used copy. You can see the adhesive from different stickers. It's had a life. Clearly, I bought it used because that's me. I go to Goodwill and I go to garage sales. I picked it up from somewhere.
I've got the 25th anniversary edition, Bird by Bird, with a very lovely bird on the cover.
Ooh la la.
Because I was impatient. I just wanted to pick it up right then. So, I had read this book before. But I think I must have read a library copy because I did not have a copy of it on my shelves. But I did read this whole thing all the way through and I was really impressed.
You've read this whole book?
Yeah.
Wow. We're breaking tradition.
Yeah, usually you're the person that's read these things.
I've never read, well, okay, the only chapter I've ever read out of this book, this Bird by Bird, is Shitty First Drafts. Because that's anthologized and put in composition readers for teachers to teach.
It's got to be a sweet gig.
What?
To have a chapter of your book anthologized and put into other writing books all over the place.
I wonder how much that pays.
I think we're in the
wrong kind of work. We should write a really good chapter of something and then just have it anthologized in a composition book.
So what do you think of the style of this book?
I enjoy her voice. I feel like she is talking to me, but she is snarky. And as everyone here knows, like, snark is a magnet for me. I just love it.
There's a lot of her in this book.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Far more than even Bradbury with his story about going to the library. In those books, you know, it's very much, here I am a successful writer, and now I will tell you about my writing life. This starts from the beginning, when she's a kid.
Yes, the introduction, it discusses her journey of becoming a writer, and it started when she was a kid, so that's how it starts, is she has this story about how she kind of became a writer. Her father was a writer, a successful writer with an agent, and he was published in like HarperCollins and the New Yorker. And so she has talent, but she had direct access to her father's agent.
She writes, my father was a writer, as were most men with whom he hung out. They were not the quietest people on the earth, but they were mostly very masculine and kind. Usually in the afternoons, when that day's work was done, they hung out
at the no-name bar in Sausalito, but sometimes they came to our house for drinks and ended up staying for supper. I loved them, but every so often one of them would pass out at the dinner table. I was an anxious child to begin with, and I found this unnerving. So this is the life she grew up in.
Right, a kind of bohemian writer's life, yes. Her father was very disciplined. He woke up every morning at 5:30 a.m. and went to his study, and he wrote for a few hours, and then he would read, and then he'd go to work.
What I find different about this book than any of the other books that we've read is that she's talking to you directly, and she's talking about herself directly, and there isn't a barrier the way that there was with like the Bickham book or the Gardner book. There's none of that. I am a lecturer talking to you.
Right. And even Bradbury kind of had that on high distance, like, I am so successful. I am the Ray Bradbury. And even though he was personable and sweet, there was a distance there. So I think I get what you're saying.
The other big difference with this book is this is our first craft book written by a woman.
Not only that, it's our first craft book that we've reviewed, written by someone who's still alive.
And still writing. Like, she was just on the New York Times bestseller list recently. And she isn't just writing a dice book. She writes fiction. She writes memoir. Mm-hmm. She writes some religious stuff.
She's spiritual, I guess, like Christian. One of her books is called Hallelujah Anyway, Rediscovering Mercy.
Mm-hmm. Help, Thanks, and Wow, The Three Essential Prayers.
Yeah, that nonfiction stuff does tend to go into some religious territory, but she has a lot of novels. Yep. She has 7 novels, so that's pretty fancy.
Mm-hmm. A past recipient of the Guggenheim Fellowship and inductee to the California Hall of Fame.
What is the California Hall of Fame? Is that it's like a whole state.
And we're not being biased here, but it's a pretty good state.
Well, I think so. I was born here. And I'm still here. And you're here.
I moved here.
And you stayed here.
Anyway, so I think one of the reasons why people like it is because you see her own struggles. You see her own failures and successes over those failures. It just feels cozy.
Yeah. When she was writing this book anyway, she was a teacher and doing writing workshops. I've had teachers kind of like her. I bet you they sit in a circle and start with writing, and there's lots of conversation. She probably doesn't lecture as a professor or a teacher. She invites people in and has discussion.
She is there to help people tap in to what they want to write and help them write, which is very different than teaching people how to write.
Exactly. But she does say that her students all read. So I don't know which students she has.
She has students that pay big bucks to take her class from her.
Yes, they probably do read. That is true. Mine, not so much. Okay, so there's different parts to this book.
We're going
to
cover the introduction today, and from part one, the chapter Getting Started. And she does talk a bit about her classes here, and I just want to read a few bits and pieces because they are enjoyable. So her chapter Getting Started talks about the classes that she teaches. Year after year, my students are bursting with stories to tell, and they start writing projects with excitement and maybe even joy. Finally, their voices will be heard, and they are going to get to devote themselves to this one thing they've longed to since childhood. But after a few days at the desk, telling the truth in an interesting way turns out to be about as easy and as pleasurable as bathing a cat. And later, after a long segment of talking about how one gets up every day and writes and, you know, does this process, my students stare at me for a moment. How do we find an agent, they ask. I sigh. And that kind of segues to one of the interesting tensions in the first chapter, Getting Started, which talks about the difference between being published and being a writer.
Yes. So publication versus writing. I think what she's addressing here is there is a fantasy. I hate to call it a fantasy because it seems judgy, but people have an image or an idea or a story in their head of what it's like to be published. They want to be the person with the name on the book at the Barnes & Noble or whatever. What does that really mean? What is the process of that? There might be assumptions like you'll make lots of money, you'll be on the bestsellers list. But even those things, what does that even mean, right? But writing to be published is something that you don't have to work at anymore. It's done. Somebody already did it. But to do the writing itself, that's where all the work takes place. That's the not fun part.
You can dream about publishing, but what it takes is writing. She has this quote, "You are in print, therefore you exist."
You are in print, therefore you exist.
you can be a writer whenever, but there's a difference between being a writer and author. And what we all want is to be an author, to have that book that has our name on it on the bookshelf, because that validates all the effort that we put into it.
Yes.
And I think what this book is getting at is that you can want that, but that's not what's going to get your book written.
Right. Even when you write your book, it doesn't necessarily mean that it will get published.
And she also says, publication isn't all it's cracked up to be. But writing is. This book here is talking about how to write, not how to be published.
Right. And the practices that go into good writing and just getting your butt in the chair. Because that is really hard to do, as we both know. Very hard to do.
You were touching on the publishing fantasy.
Yeah.
When you sit down and you're writing, whenever I get a good sentence or whenever I get something to work, it's in the back of my mind. This is something that is good enough for other people to read. And I was wondering, like, we were talking about publishing fantasies. You have a publishing fantasy?
They've changed over the years. You know, I was definitely the student, I think, she was writing about when I was like a teenager. It's very much like, oh, I would be an author. What does that even mean? I don't know. But I loved reading the stories. And also had fantasies of not having to work at Staples full time. You know, so I was like, if I could just sit around and write all day. And really loved the Bohemian, the Lost Generation writers. So they were very much into quit your job, move to Paris, and write. And, you know, drink and smoke. And I was very much attracted to that. But that requires some publication because you need to afford the food.
Yes, even in Paris back in the day, and especially right. In Paris now.
Yes, yes, exactly. I think I had that fantasy of what, like, life in general was like. Now, you know, when I was in grad school, I feel like that literally gets beaten out of you.
Like, for an MFA program.
For an MFA program, or at least for mine, it was pretty clear. You change your goal very fast. It was like, I'm not writing a bestseller. I'm not writing even for...
general audience?
Yeah, I'm not writing for general audience. And I'm not even writing for a big publisher house. I don't know if anyone had maintained any of those fantasies, but mine were clearly gone. Partly because it was poetry and nobody commercially publishes poetry. It became literary magazines. That's what you published in, literary magazines. And to be famous, I guess, as a writer, would you have your book taught to MFA students. So, oh look, you get a guaranteed 30 copies sold this semester to students. But they're all used, so you don't really get all the money back. And also the goal was kind of like, you publish to get a career as a teacher. So my goals quickly changed. And now it's different. I'm trying to please different people. I'm not trying to maybe please some weird fantasy nebulous publisher in the sky. I'm trying to please a real publisher who has to beg for money just like everyone else to get things published.
So my program worked differently than your program. And very soon, probably maybe even the first day, it was laid out clearly that if we were serious about this program, if we took it seriously, we did the internships seriously, that we would have a portfolio of stuff and that this program would teach us how to make enough money to live as a writer.
Where'd you go to school again?
UCSC, yes. Science Communication.
So,
and getting published was one of the central tenets of this program. One of the things we did was we pitched our stories to an actual magazine and got a response. And our assignment was to write the story for that magazine and to do all the research, everything else that went into it. We had people come in that were professional writers and said, okay, so this is what I do. This is how I did this thing. This is how I did this thing. This was my career track. This is how much I got paid for this particular work. This is how I got into this particular magazine. We were taught to open a magazine. Science magazines will often have a page of more general stuff and to look at it and say, okay, what is the style guide? How do they expect their writers to write to get published in this area? So for me, in my mindset, getting published means you're of enough a professional to know how to play the game, to write to specifications so that people want what you're writing and will pay you for it.
But you're talking about journalism.
I'm talking about journalism, but if you're writing short stories, it would also be that. Like you yourself said that if you want to get published in one of these literary magazines, you go to that magazine and figure out what it is that they like to publish.
Oh, obviously, yes. But you're not going to get get enough money to live.
Right. And the magazines I was looking at would give enough money to live.
It is a different lifestyle to be a journalist than it is to be a novelist or a poet or whatever. And you're also publishing to very different circles and you're publishing to very different readers.
Yes. But in my mind, my publishing fantasy is that I am a competent, together with a person that knows not to make an idiot of myself. So as when I present myself to these editors and agents, they say, ah, this is a person that I can work with. This is a person whose work I can make money off of.
Yeah. Okay. In those basic terms, yes, we got the same thing. We taught how to write a cover letter. I was actually taught how to do that as an undergrad in my creative writing, UCSE, my creative writing department. How do you look for literary magazines? How do you vet them? What do you read into them? Who do you submit to? What's the etiquette? There is an etiquette. There are tricks. I mean, I took a class called The Business of Creative Writing.
So we each have a fantasy of right. what it means. There's still something magical about being published.
There is something magical about it.
And there is something that justifies all the work that goes into writing every day. And yet, in the way that she says what her students ask her about, shows that that's not important for the business of writing itself. That might be something you have in your mind that you want to do, but that doesn't help when it's coming to the desk each day and writing.
Right. And that is the hard part, is sitting there and writing. And I would argue it is the hardest part, because I myself have a hard time sitting there.
And one can also argue that if you don't do the writing, you won't get published.
Well, okay, there's that default. Obviously, if you don't do the writing, although now with ChatGPT, Chatty, write me my novel. Okay, so we've made the distinction between publishing and writing. This chapter, or at least getting started, really focuses a lot on butt in chair. Mm-hmm. How does one get the butt in the chair? And that made me wonder, why is it so hard to just get your butt in the chair? Like, Kim, when you don't get your butt in the chair, why? What's the issue?
Fundamentally, it's not that much fun. There are two things. Number one, somebody isn't directly paying me to do this thing. So it's not, I do this stuff, I get paid. I don't do this stuff, I don't get paid. Second of all, there are so many other devices and things out there that will give me entertainment and pleasure in a way that writing does not. And I think that's not unique to writing, but it is unique to a particular kind of creative endeavor where you don't derive an immediate pleasure.
Right. So if you don't enjoy it, why are you even doing it?
I'm not sure if that's in the scope of this book.
No, I know, but it's something I think about. Like, I have an anxiety thing, and my brain spirals down deeper and deeper into the anxiety world. And when I can't come to the table, sometimes it's because I'm totally overthinking everything. And part of my problem is I have a severely critical eye, and I come back to my work, and I decide it's junk. It's awful. And all of the efforts I put into it, I've convinced myself, weren't fruitful. And then I go, why am I doing this? I suck. I'm going to watch The Great British Baking Show because that show makes me feel better.
Right. So I think she actually summed it up really well. This is a book that has no bullet points in it.
No actually bullet points.
The previous books we had, it was like, well, they tell us to do this. Should we do that or not? Maybe yes, maybe no. This is much more nebulous, but it also means you can find a quote that supports pretty much anything. I love this quote. I think it was from the intro. Throughout my childhood, I believed that what I thought was different from what other kids thought about. And that, I think, is what causes me to write. Because I think that I fundamentally see the world differently than a large number of people out there. And therefore, how I see the world is entertaining to them. Or enjoyable to them. So just as The Great British Baking Show or the blogs I read or any other number of comic books I read that give me immediate pleasure, I know that I can produce something that will give somebody else immediate pleasure.
Right.
And I believe that what I can is that. And that's what drives me to write.
Would you say you see yourself in Anne Lamott a bit? Like, does she get you?
I think anybody that felt like they didn't fit in as a kid would feel that Anne Lamott got them. Because she really portrays how awkward she felt and how she didn't fit in with the regular group of kids.
I wonder if that's tied to that fantasy of seeing one's name on a book. you see your name on a book or you see a name on a book and you think, that's me. That is the weird person that doesn't fit in anywhere. And this person who is just like me found a way to fit in. And this is going to be my way to fit in this literary world.
You are in print, therefore you exist.
So I asked you that question about, do you feel like this is you? Like she's talking about you and she's having experiences like you. Because one thing I really like about this book is I have a lot of hangups. You just heard me rant and rave about anxiety. And she says, almost all of my students have been writing at least for a little while, some of them all of their lives. Many of them have been told over the years that they are quite good and they want to know why they feel so crazy when they sit down to work. Why they have these wonderful ideas and then they sit down and write one sentence and see with horror that it is a bad one and that every major form of mental illness from which they suffer surfaces, leaping out of the water like trout. Yes. I'm like, okay. When she wrote that, either she's just saying I've witnessed this or she herself is having these issues, because that plainly describes to me exactly what it feels like to sit down and to write. And then she gives a bit of advice. Again, don't forget, this is a writing advice book, and I really like this. You can be defeated and disoriented by all of these feelings, I tell them, or you can see the paranoia, for instance, as wonderful material. Surely one of your characters is riddled with it. And you can turn it into something true and funny and frightening. Because, and this is, I think, the best quote in this book, especially if you're a memoirist. Remember that you own what happened to you. You own it. It's yours. You can do with what you want. The problem is, will a publisher want it? But regardless, when I sit down, sometimes I wonder, should I be telling this story? And the answer always comes back to yes.
I think there are many reasons why people have a hard time writing, but this is a critical one, where they don't feel like they have the authority to write, or they don't feel they've earned it for some reason. And so part of this book is to break down that barrier and to encourage everyone, these people that come to our classes, this person that's just picked this book off the shelf, to believe in themselves enough to go ahead and write.
Right. I'm hoping this book does that. I mean, she's hit a few nerves in me. Like good ones. I'm like, oh, I do that. Oh, I do that too. And then she does follow it up with some advice, mm-hmm. which I find.
This first chapter only really had one bit of advice I found.
Really?
Well, I mean, it had a process. It had a lot of, you should believe in yourself. You should seek writing the truth. You should do these things. But those aren't really specific advice. Maybe I'd always say it. This chapter had one specific piece of advice.
Well, it had the one piece of advice that I just mentioned, which is take all of your hang-ups and give them to a character.
Right.
Because you know them well. Mm-hmm. So make a character kind of like have the same neuroses that you have. But, yes, in terms of process, that's not a process activity. Mm-hmm. Instead, she had one where she talked about mining your childhood. And to do that, you start with... It reminded me of Bradbury. And he said, write the nouns. Mm-hmm. Right? She says, start with kindergarten or whatever, your first memory, and write everything down. Everything you remember. And go from kindergarten to first grade, second grade, third grade, all the way up. You go into every little minutia detail, the way you went to a family's house, what they looked like, what they ate, you know, your friends, how they betrayed you, you know, what every little thing that happened that you remember. Because all of those things you will be mining for in your book, which is the complete opposite to the author that we reviewed in our first season, our very first book, John Gardner, who said, don't write what you know.
Exactly.
It's very interesting. I don't know if these two would be friends, but interesting.
I bet they would go out for drinks together.
And she would destroy him. I'm just saying. Okay. So there is some advice in here, but there's one process piece of advice, which is the one we did for this episode.
Right. She gets about this in a very kind of meandering way as she describes what it's like to get up at the day and start writing. All the various things that come into your mind that distract you and all the things you don't like about the writing and this thing and that thing. And at the end, she says, at some point, you will get up and you will have a good writing day. And you'll look at the stuff that you wrote the other day and it says, you don't care about those first three pages, those you will throw out, those you needed to write to get to that fourth page, to get to that one long paragraph. Like, even though you're frustrated with your writing, if you commit to writing every day for a period of time and you look over it, you will find something worthwhile that you've written. And you won't find it if you don't spend that time writing those 4 pages.
Right. She also mentions that your brain gets attached to habits or routines. And if you show up every day at that same time, your brain will be primed to do it again and to do it again. It's a little disheartening to know that you're going to be writing like for a half hour or whatever, an hour, and only keep a paragraph or keep a page. But it does make sense. I used to do a similar process with poetry. I had to find the poem. I know it's been like an hour free writing and deleting and free writing and deleting. So perhaps there were lots of pages, but they all got deleted because I never kept them. So that's what we did.
Yes.
So keep in mind, if you haven't read this book, you have it on your shelf, you're not going to find at the very end of the chapter, activity, colon, and then a breakdown of what exactly you should do. It is woven into her anecdotes and her descriptions, you know, dipping into your brain, into your neuroses. She's like trying to guide you, but not tell you, which is a very middle-class way of thinking and teaching. Okay.
So that's what our exercise for the week is going to be, that we will commit ourselves to writing a particular time. Renee and I are going to call each other up, so we are committed to writing. We're going to set a timer for 30 minutes, and at the end of that time, you know, we'll go on and do whatever for the rest of our day.
So we're going to write for a half hour, and then the next day, we're going to, like, pick one paragraph that was good and throw the rest out, and then start again and do a half hour of writing. And we're going to do that for 5 days.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
And that's going to be in our bonus podcast.
Yes. So at this point, I'd usually say, hey, Renee, tell us about our Patreon options. And the thing is, this being the season 2, we are evaluating what people like, what people don't, what people respond to. And I think, especially given that we're reading this book here, rather than focus on exercises, we want to focus on process.
Yeah. Process is key, especially for this book, and doing writing exercises, although helpful, and we will do them in our bonus podcast, and we will mine this book for activities. We think to honor the tradition of process, we're going to do a process group.
Yes. This is actually something Renee has started in the past. It was quite successful because she found me, and I am now writing my novel, so obviously it was successful.
Well, I don't know if the two are linked, but I met a wonderful friend from the process.
And so what we would like to do, and we're still working out the details here, is to start another meetup group, the Zoom session, which would meet once every other week on the weeks that we don't release a podcast. And this would be open for anybody to sign up and to get together and probably focus on maybe one of the chapters. So there's like one chapter called Shitty First Drafts that is coming up. And we might just sit down and talk about the process of writing a shitty first draft. And what people are doing and what causes you to have problems or what causes you to have success. And these can be very rewarding conversations.
Yeah. I mean, writing it's hard to sit there and be solitary and to be lonely. It's kind of lonely, right? And the great thing about the process group is you don't have to show up doing any homework because you've got plenty of experience not writing or having hangups about writing or art or whatever. And you can tell people what's been going on with your project. And people will give you advice, and you don't have to take it. Or sometimes just talking it through is really helpful.
Right, and this isn't a thing about showing off what you've written or having someone evaluate what you've written or any of that kind of stuff. This is purely, you know, like, for all we know, we'll have a published writer come that's very successful, or maybe we'll have a high school student that's never written anything. But the thing is that everyone has a process, and a process group is a great way of having people come together from all different backgrounds and to share their experience and to maybe get some help.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I think it's fun.
Okay. So, right now I'd like to thank everybody that has been listening to our podcast. We've been doing this for over a year now. We're on season 2. It's gone really well.
Yeah, I did a research on podcasts, but there were a lot of like milestones that apparently are hard to get to, and we just blew through them. Like there was no problem. So, you know, and this is our first podcast, and I think we've done really well.
Yeah. We consistently have people that have subscribed to us because every time we launch a podcast, you see the numbers where people have just gotten the podcast. Mm-hmm. And there are various places that are repeat returners. So apparently we have fans in Helsinki.
Hi, whoever you are in Helsinki.
If you want to write a comment, we would love to hear about you and how you found this podcast because yes. I don't know anyone in Helsinki.
I don't know any, I mean.
I don't know if I could find it on a map.
No, I couldn't. And, you know, whoever you are, yeah, dude, email us.
Either it's one person listing multiple times or...
it's multiple people. Yeah, like, maybe it's like a writer's group. I don't know. I'm just really fascinated. We also have a bit of a following in Germany. So, hey, guten Tag. I'm so excited.
And I know there are people in Madison, Wisconsin that listen to me because I used to be from Madison, Wisconsin. And obviously there are people in Santa Cruz and there are people in Santa Clara.
Right.
So all that. But yeah, this has been, we don't really have enough numbers to really get any actual data, but it's kind of cool to see where people have listened to. And if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe we'll can include you. If you write to us, we'll include information. And thanks again.
Thank you.
We will see you in 2 weeks with the next set of chapters, which I think are look a little bit more specific. We'll be getting the shitty first drafts, short assignments, and perfectionism.
Yes. Oh, perfectionism. That fickle beast.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Words to Write By is produced by Renee Nelson and Kim Smith-Adam. Our theme music is Roll Back the Carpet by Cool Cat Music. Have a great day.
Kim's gonna cut that and we're not going back to it. All right.